Welcome to WebAx, practical web accessibility tips.
WebAx.blogspot.com.
WebAx. Website accessibility. Web standards.
Hello and welcome to WebAx podcast number 73, Bandwidth and Download Time. This is your host, Dennis.
And I'm Ross.
Hello, Ross. Glad to have you again.
Thank you, Dennis. How are things?
Busy. Crazy busy. I haven't been sleeping hardly at all the last few nights. Just been working like it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I tend to have workflows that are kind of like that.
Like, do you have spurts like that?
Yeah, I'll have a week where, like, you know, 5 o'clock rolls around and I'm done. And then I'll have others where it's like I just go all night.
Yeah. Then you could sleep on that sofa in your office there.
Oh, yeah, that's not so comfortable. But I've done it before.
All right, so anyways, we have a few cool things to talk about and got some news to go over. And then we'll get into our main segment. And the premise of that basically is bandwidth and download time on your website and making that, minimizing it, or at least, you know, using progressive enhancement to ensure that your site is web accessible.
Yeah, because that's still an important thing despite the fact that it feels like everybody's on broadband.
Yeah. But they're not.
No.
Not everybody, no.
And even if you are on broadband, there's no reason to log up servers and have slow websites.
That is true. And you could even increase the performance even more for your users if they have, like, all the top-notch gear.
Right.
Anywho, let's get into some chit-chat, my friend. Let's see.
So you came to Michigan?
Yeah.
Return to your homeland.
And you know that because I saw you there.
Right. That was a pretty big hint.
That was pretty cool. So that was actually the first full day I went to Michigan 2 or 3 weeks ago now. So I went to Ann Arbor, my old stomping grounds, and I went to the art fair with my parents. It was really cool. I walked around like the entire thing, man. My dogs were killing me.
I hear it was smaller this year. The Ann Arbor Art Fair is like,
really?
Very well known for being like a really big art fair, even outside of Michigan.
It looked the same size to me.
Really? I heard most people came out just because of the economy and it's expensive to.
Maybe. I noticed a couple changes, but it wasn't that bad as far as like. There wasn't any like stages with bands like there had been in the past.
Right.
And there was like corporate sponsors, but the corporate sponsors were cool. They had all these fun things to do, like these video games and like these photo booths and, you know, serial giveaways. It was cool. So anyways, after the meetup, I met Ross at the, the Arbor Brewing Company?
Yep, Ann Arbor Brewing Company.
With a few other very cool guys and web professionals, and that was a lot of fun. I finally got a chance to look up a couple of those sites from the guys that I met there, and some good stuff they're doing.
Right. Twilk was one of them, which is a Twitter background creator. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And then there's that free ringtone service. Do you remember the name of that one?
Yep. That would be Bongo Tones.
Yeah. So check those out. So anyways, besides drinking some beers with Ross, I went to a Tigers game at the Comerica Park Baseball Stadium in downtown Detroit. I played 9 rounds of golf with my brother, who turned 40, which is the main reason I went.
Yeah.
And have you been to this place called Slows in downtown Detroit?
I've heard of it, never been there.
Oh, you gotta go. You must go. It's awesome. You got to go for like
restaurant, bar.
Yeah, well, it's a restaurant and a bar.
Okay.
But, you know, I would go for the food. It's like this slow barbecued, like awesome Southern like food. So I highly recommend.
I'll check it out next time I'm in.
Next time anybody's in Detroit, find Slows, which is by the old Tiger Stadium, which was very sad because I drove by it. It's all torn down now, and like I seriously like was. Well, I didn't cry, but you know, I was taken back. I was taken back, you know, by the sight of it. It was pretty weird.
You didn't shed one tear?
No, I didn't. But I was, but I was sad.
Okay.
I was too happy from eating all that good food. See.
Okay. Otherwise,
otherwise I would have been crying. Yeah. All right, let's move on. I took a visit to the Yahoo Accessibility Lab. And there's a post on that on WebAx. And that was really cool. This guy that I work with at RIM, a new one of the... Whoa, what is that, a truck?
No, it's the AC turning on.
Oh. Okay, this guy at work that I work... that I work with, he knows somebody, one of these guys, these two guys that run this accessibility testing lab at Yahoo, one of them... the, you know, big corporate buildings on their campus there in Sunnyvale. So it was actually my last day of vacation. I had off. I was catching up on things, and I went over there and met those guys for like an hour and a half or something. And yeah, that was really cool. So check out the blog post if you haven't yet on WebAx. There's a little picture and stuff too.
That's pretty cool. So they have a pretty nice lab there. You get to kind of see any testing being done.
No, I mean, it's just two guys that run it, and it's just like a, you know, moderate-sized room. It's not that big, and they have, like, you know, two or three computers, and they have a whole bunch of, like, assistive technology lying on the tables. So I got to check out, like, a couple, like, switch devices, which basically are for people who have motor impairments. So basically they can just switch a switch. That's pretty much all they can do. So they use like this software on the computer that like optimizes that type of input to the computer so that they can type and do all kinds of the usual stuff. So that was pretty far out to see that. And they had, you know, like an alternative keyboard, and I even saw one of those Braille output devices.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've seen one of those.
Those are far out. I was like, whoa, but, you know, those are really expensive. And somebody was saying that, you know, they're not that popular in the United States because they're just, like, expensive. But, like, in Europe, you know, the countries over there, like, subsidize those kinds of things better. So they're a little more popular in Europe, but...
Gotcha. And they test all their software in just these two computers? Or is this one of many labs?
It's the main one, as far as I know.
Wow, and that's pretty. It seems pretty small considering how much stuff they have out there. But you know, maybe that's all they need.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't want to say any more because I don't want to, you know, say yes if it's not absolutely true. But as far as I understand it, but yeah, there's a couple. One of the two guys that works there. Victor, the guy that you see on the that Yahoo Video Accessibility Lab, where he like demos a screen reader and stuff.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen that guy? He's blind. He's got like a Russian accent or something. But anyways, yeah, he's a cool young guy. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, all right. Pretty neat opportunity.
Yeah, it was. I had to take that opportunity. Like I said, I was on vacation, but I'm like, well, I'm going anyway. Well, let's move on. I just want to mention about some updates on accessible Twitter.
Is some of the stuff keeping you up late at night?
Yeah, this is mostly not everything. I've been doing a lot of different things. Like, I found all these cool ways to optimize Firefox. So I was doing that, and just like I found, I got hooked on blip.fm. If anyone uses that, it's like a DJing radio, like kind of social media site. It's pretty cool. But anyways, so accessible Twitter. Let's see. So yeah, I've been doing a lot of trying to market it, you know, social media marketing or whatever you want to call it. Kind of doing some planning for, you know, for beta if I ever get there. And
so officially we'll make it a beta versus an alpha.
Well, I just want to fix a couple more issues and just get them out of the way. I don't even know if they need fixing or not, but I'm just kind of sitting on it. And then once those are done, I'm going to move it into beta. But then in the beta stage, I have like a bunch of things planned, a bunch of awesome stuff planned.
So
I can't wait to get to it. It's just a matter of time.
So being that it's a Web 2.0 type application, will it ever move out of beta?
Yeah, it'll move to beta 2.
Good enough.
But I mean, once I get to the point, you know, where all the main things I'm targeting, you know, are done without trying to add too many more, then yeah, I might take off the beta thing. But I probably will hit a beta like 2, I think, and we'll see what happens, see where it goes. But yeah, so last week there was a couple new articles that came out about accessible Twitter. So if you just go to accessibletwitter.com, there'll be some links there and check it out. Yeah, and give me a dig too on those articles if you're on dig, that'd be great. Yeah, and I just did some other like just cleaning up some code in the background, and then on the user end side, I did some rearranging because the content on the like homepage and about page got pretty lengthy and cluttered, so I separated like the articles about accessible Twitter and completed tasks and features like to their own pages to help clean it all up. And then like if you log into accessible Twitter and right just before the tweet field where you enter your status, Twitter status or tweet, I created a little feature. It's like says tweet about accessible Twitter, and when you click the link, it like automatically inputs like some text to get you started about you know, giving the application a mention. So
is it like accessible Twitter is the best? Here's why. Dot dot dot.
It just says it gives like the URL and then my Wait, let me try it. Let's see. Okay, there. It says, try this superb Twitter web application. And then it has the URL, username, and then two hashtags.
Very cool.
But yeah, I'm glad I did that because, you know, I've probably had, I don't know, at least a half dozen people use that exact phrase and just hit okay and then just submit that. So that was cool.
Our suggestion.
Yeah. All right, one last topic. The future of Skype.
Yeah, Skype is in trouble, which is bad because that's what we use.
And that's what we're talking on right now, yeah, and record our podcast with. So if you haven't
find a new way.
Yeah. If you haven't heard eBay, who owns Skype and PayPal, is having some legal issues, right? And of course, we'll put a good link on this blog post with more about it, but I haven't really read into it. All I know is a bunch of legal issues with the technical aspects of the application. And what is it, copyright infringement or something? I don't know.
Some sort of patent.
Or patent infringement or something. Yeah, something like that. So we'll see if it stays. I also heard, though, through the grapevine that eBay was working on another similar application. But I have a feeling if they are, and if they have to launch that, then that would probably, I'm guessing that would cost money. But
right. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
Time will tell, because maybe we are cheap and we don't want to pay it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully maybe people will start appreciating Skype, you know, because everybody's like, oh, Skype. But if it goes away, then they're going to be like, what happened to Skype?
Right. I can't call anybody.
Skype is pretty cool, so don't knock Skype. And, you know, a while back I downloaded the version 4, which is it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible tool.
Yeah, it's free conversations, just like you said. All right, let's go on to the news.
WebEx. So we have an article about using colors and links and WCAG 2 from our friends at WebAIM.
Jared Smith, yep. The man.
This is the man.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a chance to read through it? It's pretty cool. Talking about, you know, contrast ratio and if you are not using underlines, then how you have to have enough contrast to make sure that it's still obvious.
Oh my God, that has been a pet peeve of mine lately. Everywhere I go on the web now, there's like, I'm telling you, there's no underlines on links. It's driving me insane. And then but then the links are like this blue or dark blue, and the rest of the text is like black. And I'm like, you know, I'm pushing 40 here, you know.
These shades are looking pretty close.
I got my glasses on, but I'm pushing 40, and like, you know, sometimes, you know, if the text is real small and you're on your laptop, you know, sometimes it's even hard. It's hard for even for me to tell, you know, if that's a link or not.
Yeah, yeah. And I have pretty good vision, and there's times where I'm like, don't realize something's a link until I hover over it.
I know, and that's sad. That really is sad.
As a designer, I understand you want to make things look nice, but come on.
I know. You want then make the freaking link look nice because it has, you know, the link. It has to look like link.
Right.
It can't look like regular text. Right. But yeah, I'm looking at the article now. I did read through it a little bit before, but he talks about the link states also,
right.
Including, and he's got something to say about the hover and focus state and stuff like that. So yeah, another good article from Jared Smith.
Right.
Oh yeah, and just a quick blurb about there's the Access IT 2009 awards are they're taking nominations right now, and the deadline is the 25th of August, so in a couple weeks. And this year, I guess, I think for the first time this year, nominations are only taken online. I do believe, though, that they have a phone number that you can call in case you're unable to do it online. But I submit it accessible Twitter, so.
Excellent. Keep posting up how it goes.
Yeah, I haven't really. I don't even know if I got. I don't think I got an email confirmation or anything, which was a little sketchy. But I mean, when I submitted it, it gave me a confirmation. But anyways, yeah, we'll see how that goes. So if you have some kind of accessible technology or website or anything that you think is really good and helpful and innovative, then go there and nominate it.
Good. So the CVS accessible website and point of sale. It's one of yours.
Oh, is it? Oh yeah. This is the it's the CVS pharmacy.
They had a press release.
That's a drugstore or pharmacy in the United States. I don't know if they're international or not. But yeah, that's they made an announcement recently that was going around the web, so I just thought I'd mention it, that they you know, they're really putting a lot of effort towards enhancing accessibility to its website, especially for the visually impaired and to the store, like point of sales devices.
Yeah.
So there was a press release that went out, I think July 30th, about that. So it was pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, nice that they're putting some effort towards it, and it's not kind of spurred by a pending lawsuit or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, Oh, have you? Did you see this comic strip on Smash?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, there was that period of time where people were up in arms about XHTML2 is being dropped. What's going on? So.
Yeah, and HTML5 and what's going on, and is XHTML1 going away or what?
Right. So there's a pretty funny cartoon up on Smash Magazine that kind of walks you through the difference.
It's not really funny per se.
I thought it's kind of funny? Well, the milk versus the cheese and the soy milk, and I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I mean, no, I'm not knocking it. I'm saying it's an awesome cartoon, but I'm not saying it's like ha-ha funny. I'm just saying it's like a subtle, like, cool, like, funny. But, yeah, so basically Jeremy Keith wrote this thing and got an illustrator to illustrate it, and it's freaking an awesome piece of work, man. So lots of kudos, props for that. So you got to read it. It's hilarious. So.
Yeah. It's quite good.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's hilarious, but it's very informative, but it's very entertaining. I mean, just the illustrations are excellent, and it's just very cute, maybe is the word. I don't know.
I thought it was funny.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. So, Jeremy Keith, man, that guy rocks.
Yeah. And Listener Payment. I follow him on Twitter.
Adoptio is like his persona screen name thing.
Right, his avatar. Anyways, so our next article is on accessible drag and drop using the
Aria,
yes.
Yeah. By our good friend Gez Lemon. And he has come out with another groundbreaking article on dev.opera.com, accessible drag and drop using Aria. Yeah, the WAI Aria. And honestly, I haven't gone through this one. I've gone through it, but I haven't, you know, read the entire thing. But yeah, it just looks amazing. I mean, what you can do with Aria now and like, and how much it helps with accessibility is just, like, you can't even question it.
Right. Yeah, I scanned through it. You know, it looks like some incredible sort of ideas as far as keyboard equivalents. And if you have poor vision and can't really see the start and stop points of drag and drop, how you can approach it.
Awesome. Yeah, and, I mean, I used to do a lot of web-based training development. Drag and drop was always, you know, the number one stickler, you know, for accessibility. So this is awesome. Instead of doing a silly, you know, matching, you know, select drop downs and matching, like, you know, dorky stuff like that, you can use this modern technology and you could still make your drag and drop accessible. Anyways, let's move on. Don't just tick boxes.
Which is an article that talks about accessibility is more than just checking off, yes, I have alt tags.
Right, so if you have a checklist and you check off all the boxes, that doesn't mean your site's accessible.
Right.
So, by accesssites.org, which is, we haven't really talked about them much lately, but it's a nifty website put on by several like web accessibility experts out there, and including our friends Mike Cherum and Joel Dolson. Although, you know, I haven't heard from Mike Cherum lately. It seems like he's been kind of retired or something from web accessibility. I mean, I think I see an article from him still once in a great while, but
yeah, he might have other things going on.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. And that's fine. Although, you know, one of the things going down on WebEx, there was a lot of comments going on the post about inaccessible WordPress theme or template. Yeah. You know, and he had created, you know, really, really one of the best ones, but, you know, it's getting pretty outdated now, you know, with the speed the web moves at.
Right. And how quickly WordPress is moving now, too. Get like a new update every month.
Yeah, and now you got these widgets and blah, 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 blah. So, okay. So, yeah, don't just tick boxes.
Which hopefully everybody listening to this has heard at least once or twice before.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard it before, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things in web accessibility you have to check manually, and you can't check from a list of items, or, you know, you can't check with an automated tool. You know, you can't check by just, you know, using browser plugins or whatever. You know, I mean, some stuff has to be done by a human.
Right. And then our last item is accessibilitywatch.com.
Yeah, that's a fairly new website that's out now. It's like a news blog on accessibility powered by WordPress. And it's pretty good. It's looks like it's got about 30 or 40 little blog posts already over the last few months. I believe that's how it's been around, like a few months. Let's see. Yeah, the archive started in March of this year.
Yeah.
So it's fairly new. But yeah, I found this on Twitter, believe it or not. And
good for so many things.
Yeah. The categories include... And you could tell it's kind of new by these categories. I think that they were kind of entertaining to me. Academic, accessibility news, Adobe Acrobat, developer, law and policy, Microsoft Office. So the topics sound pretty good, but I think once they get more and more, you know, content in there, they're going to have to rearrange that.
Yeah. But that's pretty easy to do through WordPress. So.
Yeah. WordPress is awesome. But just to note, this the site is put on by Hi Software, which is the company that makes Cynthia Says. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of a nice way for them to keep the news going.
Yeah. If you don't know it, and if you don't know, Cynthia Says is... is an automated accessibility tool.
Right.
A web-based... it's web-based, right? They don't have any other services, right? Cynthia Says it's all web-based.
Yeah, and the only one I've seen has been web-based.
They don't have, like, an app or...
So
check that out. It's pretty cool. All right. I think that's enough news. Bandwidth and download time.
This used to be such a huge part of building websites, and one of the huge advantages of CSS is that you can, you know, reduce footprints and download size and that sort of thing, and now everybody kind of has gotten used to high-speed internet, and it seems like it just doesn't get the attention that it used to.
Totally. Well said. It just goes by the wayside, right? Like, this issue gets overlooked, and, you know, I looked in the... in WCAG 2 and everything, and some other like guidelines, accessibility guidelines, and unless I've missed something, I had some trouble finding anything that specifically said, like, you know, to what we're going to talk about, and, you know, reducing file sizes and just doing all kinds of stuff to try to you know, to help low band users on your web page, make it accessible for lower internet access speeds.
Right. I mean, it seems like there's a few areas that kind of, in WCAG 2, allude to it, but don't specifically call it out. And WCAG 1 mentions it a couple times. And that's about it. But it's still important. It's still part of web accessibility. You know, if somebody can't reasonably navigate your site because of the page size, then it's not accessible.
Exactly. Like WCAG 2, I think, was purposely written that way. It's, you know, it's more about the concepts.
Right.
Because technology is so varied and it changes so fast. In WCAG 1, did you find an actual, I mean, like you said, they mention it, but there's not even any specific, in any of the guidelines, if you could find one, please let me know, because I couldn't find one, like a specific guideline or point or something that talks about this. In WCAG 1, I found a blurb that said, the users may have a text-only screen, a small screen, or a slow internet connection. Users may have turned off support for images, e.g. due to a slow internet connection. Well, it could be for other things, but so it's like a blurb in there. But anyways, and I even looked up Section 508, which is totally outdated anyway, but I couldn't find the phrase, like, connection speed or internet connection speed or anything.
Yeah, it just seems like it's, I don't know if it's like a measurement thing or what, but yeah, it just isn't directly called out anywhere.
Okay.
But it's still a problem. And it looks like we've found some facts and figures. You know, since 2003, the average web page size triples. Yikes.
I know, isn't that crazy? In 2003, well, it's from 2003 to 2008 was the study. So over those 5 years, the average page size went from 93K to over 312K. Now, I'm assuming that means everything, right? That can't just be the HTML. That must include, like, all the images and JavaScript.
Maybe. I'd have to look again.
I read the article, but it was a great article. Of course, we'll put links to all this stuff on the post, but it must just mean that all the objects in HTML and everything together, I'm assuming.
Right.
But anyways, it more than triples in that five-year span. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And the number of objects per page went from like 25.7 to nearly 50. So that's almost double the number of objects on a page. And by objects, I'm assuming they mean like images and external links to JavaScript and CSS and stuff.
Right, right. And then video seems to be a huge thing too. You know, we got 3% of server responses are for videos. They count for over 98.6% of bytes transferred.
Yeah, I'm going to repeat that just because if you miss what Ross just said, it's just crazy. 3% of server responses on the web, requests to the server on the web, only 3% are for videos. But the bytes transferred on the web from the servers, the video accounts for over 98.6%. Of the bytes. So
tons of videos are being transferred. Just the file size, yeah. And it's not so much that people are just watching lots of videos, it's just that videos take up
right.
So much bandwidth.
Right. Because one, like, you know, how big is one, like 1 minute video? Say, a meg? A half meg?
Probably more than that. I mean,
well, obviously it depends on how you compress it, right. But say
like
one
meg or a 1 minute MP3 is about a meg.
Okay. And then, then you compare it to like just a basic, you know, brochure style website, like the whole entire thing with, images and everything. Altogether is, say it's like 5 or 10 pages and stuff, how big would that be? Like 300K maybe? Like,
right.
You know?
Right.
For like the entire thing? I'm checking accessible Twitter right now, and my entire accessible Twitter website, everything altogether, is 400K.
Yeah, so it's pretty significant, and you know that video tends to grow.
Okay, so there lies the problem. Well, actually, we have a couple other issues.
Yeah. And the part of it is that there's still people on 56K or less. And in fact, you know, 11%, which is significant, you know. This was a study in March 2008 that said, you know, 11% of people on the internet are still on 56K connection or less. So that's...
In the U.S.,
yeah, in the U.S. So 10 out of 100, 11 out of 100.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That's a fair amount of people.
Yeah, that's a fair amount of people. Yeah. 10% is a lot of people.
Right. And then it's not quite as bad. It seems like 5%.
Yeah, so that was... The U.S. study was March of 08, and this U.K. study was the December of 08, and they found that... low band users was about 5%.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not even really counting people who have like technically a high band, but it's bogged down, or the amount of company internet connection that's, you know, being shared by a lot of people. Mm. There's a lot of situations where just because you have DSL doesn't mean that it's, you know, at the maximum capacity.
Right. So the, another couple of issues is the issue, the economic issue, just the plain fact that you know, many people simply can't afford broadband internet connection at home.
Right.
You know, I make a decent amount of money with my job, and I have broadband internet connection at home, but we actually just got rid of cable TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's tight out there, especially with, you know, the, I mean, it always is, but especially with the way the economy is. I mean, you can't, if, you know, the internet is supposed to be accessible to all. So that doesn't mean, you know, all who can afford broadband.
Right, right. Different income brackets and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm going to tweet that.
live tweeting from the show.
Tick, 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 tick. And then the other issue is mobile.
Right. Right. I mean, even fast mobile, 3G is not terribly fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's lots of people who don't have 3G but still want to get on a website and their phone.
That's right. So, yeah. I mean, if you are on a mobile device, maybe you don't have a computer, it broke, or you can't afford one, and you're on a, you got a... you know, an iPhone or whatever, you can't afford 3G. You got your BlackBerry or iPhone with no 3G. And then, you know, so, you know, in your company, you know, can't afford to like make two or more sites, you know, one for mobile, one for the high band, one for this and one for that. So, so the points we're going to discuss coming up to cap off this wonderful podcast is like, what you can do for your website to make it much faster and optimize it, and other tidbits and to help those situations.
Yep.
So let's get into it. What you can do. The first thing is use progressive enhancement. So that's a basic underlying theme that you hopefully are doing already using. Okay. Using web standards, separating your content from style, from behavior, and you know, in starting with the common lowest denominator, and then enhancing your behavior on top of that, depending on the situations. Like if they have JavaScript, if they have a, you know, faster internet connection, so on and so forth.
Right, right. It's how you really should be building your websites, anyways. It's just kind of an added perk, a great way to plan the site, to build it, to make sure that it scales nicely with different technologies and capabilities.
Right. Or like, you know, and now I've been doing a lot of experimentation with like with CSS3 and stuff. So like, you know, you could use progressive enhancement, you know, with like CSS3 and like I've seen some sites doing that already. Like, well, you've been doing it. Like, last year you started doing that, right? Doing, like, the text shadows and all this cool stuff.
Yeah, I've been playing around with it. And that's a great example. You know, rather than creating all sorts of images for, you know, rounded corners, you can use CSS3 and the browser can support it. Great. You know, it looks nice. And that's a lot, you know, less of a download or a footprint.
And that's exactly what I do on Accessible Twitter and on my own. I call it my vanity page, DennisLembrey.com. You know, forget, I don't want to mess with all this crazy, you know, rounded corner graphics and like 100 different ways to do it. And then it's just insane. Yeah. It creates more, you know, cluttered code and blah, 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 blah. So
a lot more fragile, things break easier.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a great way to go about it.
So I like that. But anyways, but speaking of images, of course, optimize your images.
Yeah, make sure that you gifs you don't use any more colors than needed. You compress your JPEGs well.
Yeah,
sprites where possible.
Well, I just wanted to mention that every other day I still come across on the web, like, you know, these images that are like not optimized. You know, one like 400 by 400 pixel like image of this guy's like glass pottery artwork, it was like 250k. I was just like, man, if you're on low band, how do you expect to see that?
Right.
It takes
forever.
Yeah, I think people and developers, unfortunately, you know, don't forget what it was like to be on low band. It's no fun.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, sprites.
Yep, and sprites are where you have, you know, several different icons in like the same one image file, and you use CSS to shift the background of that image so that only the right one shows.
Correct. And that so basically, instead of having the point and download to the and cache like 10 different little icons, you're just caching right. like one file, icon, image file, and then you just move it around CSS. So you're saving on like number of hits and you're saving on total file size.
Yep. And server calls, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah.
And of course, you should always be writing clean code. I'm sure it's not bloated, you know, divitis or, or whatever your problem is.
Right on, dude. I gotta write that in the notes here. Divitis. I love that word.
And I hope by this point people aren't still using cables, but I suppose that, you know, there are places where people are using cables, so don't.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm specified for design, not for cable.
I'm trying to think of some other stuff. Well, of course, you know, don't put in a bunch of inline CSS garbly gook, you know, if you use a class and just repeat that, that saves saves characters and
CSS shorthand where possible.
Yeah, that's another good one. Here, let me write that down. CSS shorthand. Those shorthand is fun.
Yeah. Takes time and code and size.
Okay, so what else can you do?
Use external CSS and JavaScript files so that it only has to download that code once and it can cache it. Save bandwidth.
Yeah. I'm modifying our notes here. And, you know, because I just thought of something. What do you think about this recommendation? Use Google hosted JavaScript library files.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. They've got some pretty fast servers, and talk a little bit more. What would we use it now? Another technique. Well, that's
the point behind it is, say jQuery. Okay, lots and lots of sites use jQuery. So the point is, if you use the Google hosted jQuery files, there's a fairly good chance that the user coming to your site already has them cached.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. So if they're already cached, then they don't have to download it. So that is huge. So, yeah. So that's a good idea. And they host all different kinds of stuff. I'll have to find the link. But Google hosts all kinds of JavaScript library files and other stuff, you know, so you just link straight to there.
Right. And it saves you from having to copy into every directory and every site you're working
on. Yeah. You don't have to download those damn files for every site. And
right.
Oh, yeah. So you're saving. For CSS, when you're... How can I say it without using these two words? When you use an external CSS file, use the link command, not import.
Yep.
Do you know the technicalities on that?
I forget exactly why, but I do know that that's true. The link is faster than import. I'll have to look up.
Yeah.
I read about it once. It escapes me.
All right. Well, it's a good practice.
Yep.
And then as... reduce the file size of your CSS and JavaScript files by not only doing those things we've mentioned already, but you can at least minify your files and maybe even compress them or gzip those files.
So minifying them just kind of, well, for CSS it takes out all the white space, increases some of the file size.
You know how I minimize my CSS files?
Magic?
Huh? Knock, knock. I don't really... The only way... maybe I should be doing more, but to me, the easiest and best and pretty much just as effective way to minimize my CSS files is to do Control-All or Control-A and select everything and then do a Shift-Tab and just, like, remove all the indentation.
Oh, okay.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, it's definitely better than nothing.
But JavaScript files are different because, there's more tools out there to minify it, and you can make it one big, huge blurb.
Right. You can actually do some more compression.
And you know, it also depends on the size of these documents. Like, if you have a pretty small external CSS and JavaScript file, and you compress it, you're really not saving that much, honestly.
Right.
So the bigger your files are, the more you want to do this, and the more you want to compress them also. Do you know much about gzip?
I've used it. I wouldn't say I'm an expert.
Uh-huh. There's a... You probably know more than I do, but I do know that... I'll have to find this, too, that Google has a cool little... training page video thing about gzip in your files. So I'll have to add that link to this. Okay. I think you wrote this one, combine CSS, JavaScript, and HTML files.
Yeah. So the idea here is that, sometimes, you know, some of the longest, page load time is caused by call to the server there is.
Mm-hmm.
So every item on your page that it has to be kind of called, like whether it's an image or a CSS file or JavaScript, you know, something external that it has to load, there has to be a request to the server to get that. That's like a server call. And that can actually take up a lot of time. So if you have like, you know, five different style sheets, combining them into one would make it faster. And same with JavaScript.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so that it doesn't have to call and grab five separate style sheets, even if it's the same size file-wise, just having one would make the page a little faster.
Okay, yeah. You know, and a while back I was doing that. I'm like, well, you know, it's easier for your CSS if you have your typography in a separate file and then your,
right.
You know, such layout CSS in another file. And so I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I'll try that. And that's all fine and good, but then I started realizing you have more files and just
right.
Like, yeah, and just, yeah. And if
so if you like to have them separate, that's fine, you know, when you're developing, just make sure to combine them, compile them.
That's a good idea. And another trick is you have one CSS file that you link into your HTML. But your other CSS files, you import into the first CSS file.
Yeah, I think that's... you still run into the same problem where you're kind of pulling 5 files off the server versus 1, but at least it's easier to manage.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really do that. I've just heard of that technique. And it's supposed to work well, except another reason why I don't do it is that I think it was IE, like, doesn't... One of the browsers, one of the big browsers, I'm not sure if it was IE, but doesn't cache those the secondary CSS files.
It's a bit of a problem.
So it's like, why do it if it's your browser is not going to cache all of them? It's just going to cache the first one. All right, moving on. Use media domains.
Yeah, so this is kind of a cool trick. Most browsers only download 3 items from a domain at a time. So if you have, 3 images and 3 CSS files, it's going to wait until one of those first three is done before it starts downloading one of the next 3. And you can get around that by if you have subdomains for your different media files. So you could have your domain was accessibletwitter.com, you could have css.accessibletwitter.com, and images.accessibletwitter.com, that sort of thing. And that way the browser will think it's a different domain and pull more than 3 at a time.
Ah, yeah, I think I have heard of that trick, although I have not used it. Have you used it?
Yeah, I've used it, and it seems to make a noticeable difference.
Yeah?
It seems like the easiest way to set it up is, you just have all these different subdomains, and they all point to the same, virtual directory on your server. So you don't actually have to, work on sorting, each one out or anything like that. It's just a nice, easy way to speed up your website.
Very cool. Very hip.
Yes.
And then set up your server to send pages and files compressed?
Yeah, so this is a trick with Apache and GZIP, and you can actually have all your files kind of sent to a browser, GZIP, and then when they get there, that's when they're expanded. So it just basically compresses everything on the fly, and there's a little tool called PHP Speedy that will do this for you. And this is something that I read about in website optimization book written by Steve King.
Okay.
Which is a great book talking about, speeding up your website and that sort of thing.
So that is, what is it exactly? Is it a service on your Apache server or something?
I think it's something you configure with within your server, and it's also a bit of code within your PHP.
Uh-huh.
It's basically class.
Okay. And then it uses this GZIP, Apache GZIP compression technique.
Right, right.
It implements that.
Yeah, so...
Cool.
So everything, all the bandwidth and all the files are smaller when they're sent, and, to the user, it doesn't look any different.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
PHP Speedy, and I will, I see your link there in our notes. I'll, of course, add that to the show notes. I should use that term now, instead of, our WebAx blog post podcast blog thing. I like show notes. I think that Paul Boeck says that a lot, right?
Well, yeah, so then it has to be cool.
And I just need the English accent. Then I'll sound really smart.
I would do an impression, but mine's terrible.
Okay, never mind. I was going to say something derogatory about American Southern accents, but I'll hold off.
Probably a good plan. So, our last site.
Let's move on. caching.
Yes, you should cache dynamic data and Ajax.
When appropriate.
Right, when appropriate.
When appropriate. Meaning, man, I have so much to do on accessible Twitter. It's working pretty well, but there's just so much I can do to enhance it. And one of the things on my list, my long list, is for the trends page.
Ah, right.
We got the weekly trends, you got the daily trends, and then we got the current trends. And the weekly trends, obviously, you don't have to pull that in, you know, like every time somebody comes and loads the page, right?
Right.
So that's one of my things, an example there, is to,
yeah, that's a good example.
To use cache with that, you know, and just recache it every, you know, what, 12 hours or whatever.
Great.
Any other examples you could think of offhand?
Yeah, I think that's a good one. You know, any time that you can, you have a pretty clear idea of when things are going to be updated, you don't need to reload it every time.
Okay. I guess that's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
And we'll put links to a couple other great websites on this topic. If you haven't come across them already, blah, blah, one is from Yahoo. I think it's a little older, but still very relevant. And it's called Best Practices for Speeding Up Your Website from Yahoo. It's an excellent read. And then the one from Google that I mentioned earlier, and it has like techniques and those fun little videos that Google does.
Yeah.
And it's like a mini site they made called Let's Make the Web Faster.
Yeah, both are great resources. So
excellent. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I browsed through them quite a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good tips, good videos. Well done.
I know the Yahoo one is fairly popular. I think the Google one's newer.
Yeah.
So. Well, great. So we all have lots of stuff to think about and to go back to our code and see if we can implement some of these techniques and make your website faster, therefore, and lighter, and therefore more accessible.
Yeah, and more usable, more user-friendly, so there's a lot of perks.
Yeah, mobile-friendly, and you're doing the world really a favor by saving on, you know, bandwidth, you're saving on, you could... And saving on storage space, and you could be saving money on storage space depending on, you know, how big your site is and how much traffic you have.
Right, right.
And, yeah. So, give the low-band users a break. And mobile users.
Yes.
And the
servers.
And the servers. Yeah. And, you know... I mean, it could also do, well, I don't know, like with images and stuff. I mean, there's just so many different factors. It's just like optimizing and doing progressive enhancement. It's just, you know, the way to go.
Right.
So, cool. That was a great podcast. I hope you all picked up some good tips. I had fun.
I always do.
All right, Ross, thanks for joining us again, and we'll speak to you later. Bye.
You will find the WebEx podcast and blog at webex.blogspot.com. That's WebEx.blogspot.com.